The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Ireland's savings specialists. Rabodirect, the straight-talking savings bank. The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Ireland's savings specialists. Rabodirect, the straight-talking savings bank.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, the Department of Foreign Affairs has confirmed that there was no representation at the funeral of King Abdullah yesterday. However, Tony Cotter, the Irish ambassador to Saudi Arabia, will be representing Ireland at a condolences ceremony this evening. Now, on the question of broadband, Marion, we are the very same here in West Wicklow. Sometimes a bit of coverage, but could not Skype or look at anything online. It's good enough down the road about a mile away, but bad pockets in most rural areas, and I think that can be repeated pretty well right around the country, and it is frustrating to say the very least. I've said it before that in part of Mayo that I'm familiar with, you cannot get a mobile phone call. Actually, you can occasionally get a text that kind of slips through the system, but other than that, forget it. Anyway, actually sometimes that can be rather handy too, but not for work, if you know what I mean. Now, moving on, as they say, before leaving Louisiana for Ireland, a 19-year-old Robert Mazel would not have been able to find us on the map. It took him a while to find his feet and a little longer to find the voice that has made him one of the most successful performers on the Irish country music scene. And I know he's busier than ever, and he was just telling me where he was last night and so on. His new record is Pure Country. Robert Mazel, you're very welcome indeed.
Very good morning, Mary.
It's kind of odd that a person comes all the way from Louisiana to Ireland to make it in country music, isn't it?
Well, I didn't come to make it in country music, but when I was here, I needed work. and I was a better singer than I was an insurance salesman, so it sort of worked out okay for me.
Right. And tell me the whole thing, the Louisiana-Ireland connection.
Well, okay. Well, I moved, I grew up in a place called Shreveport, which is the most northern city in Louisiana, but sort of a quite industrial place. And my family, there's a couple of stories that I can tell you about Louisiana and how I grew up there. But the connection to Ireland was pretty much very simple. When I was about 17, my father contracted work in Connecticut up on the East Coast. And I was just about to come into my last year or so in high school, as we call it in America.
Yeah.
And I was working for him at the time part-time. And he said, look, I have a couple of years work out here. The work in Louisiana was drying up for him, so let's go out there. My mom stayed in Louisiana where she is now, and myself and my father moved up there, and we started a company. And when I was in Connecticut, I met this Irish girl. And, you know, I was intrigued. I had never heard an Irish person speak. I didn't know where Ireland was. My closest connection to Ireland was when we were in school on St. Patrick's Day. We called it Paddy's Day, same as you do. If you didn't wear green of some description, you got pinched.
Oh.
And that was pretty much it. I mean, I just didn't know anything about it.
You didn't know even who Paddy or St. Patrick was?
No, I hadn't a clue. Hadn't a clue. But I learned very quickly, because when I wanted to find out about this girl that I had met, I'd done my education then. And to make a long story short, myself and Elaine, she's from Naas here in Kildare, and we got together and we moved back to Ireland. And that was on the 26th of December, 1991. And we were married on the 4th of January, 1992.
Uh-huh.
Is that right? Yeah,
you weren't hanging around.
I was here for 4 days before I got married. Right. So I had a little bit of a whistle-stop tour around Naas and Dublin. And then the nuptials came up then.
Right, so. Okay. You had an interesting, difficult childhood in that you were fostered.
Yeah.
And you're really glad you were fostered.
Well, yes, I suppose. I think the view of fostering here in Ireland has negative and positive connotations for people. Because when you hear about a child being fostered, you automatically think that, oh my God, his parents couldn't raise him, so he had to be taken out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the case in our house. We had the house I grew up in was, you know, there was violent, turbulent times. There was conflict. But when I was taken out of the house at 6 months old, I obviously didn't know who I was being brought to. Mama Courtney was the foster mother at the time. I think it was the fact that I moved to Ireland and I had time to reflect on my childhood that made me appreciate Mama Courtney for what she was to me. And because Mama Courtney was...
I should let people know, that's a track on one of...
Yes. It's a song that, it's a song about the life of Mom and Papa Courtney, the people who raised me. But as I was saying, you know, I don't mind the fact that I was fostered. I wished that my childhood had gone a bit smoother for everybody concerned. My mother's still alive and well in Louisiana, and she's doing well now. I think she's come to that time in her life where she's put a lot of the ghosts behind her in her life, and she's doing well. Mom and Papa Courtney both have passed away in the last number of years, but Mama Courtney was 4'11". She was in the army back before it was cool for women to be in the army.
Right.
She was a tough little character. But I sort of made an emotional connection with Mama Courtney, I think more so than a lot of the foster children she had. Because I think over the years, they reckon she had over 30 of them that came through.
Right.
But me and Mama Courtney sort of clicked together. And it's funny because my own mother... I never had the crack with her, and that's an Irish thing.
Yes.
But with Mama Courtney, you could just sit and laugh with her. She, you know, she was very strict. I mean, we went to church on Wednesday evenings, on Sunday mornings, and on Sunday evenings.
It's a lot of church.
They were Baptist people. I fell asleep a lot in church. I did. But Mama Courtney would always give you a nudge, and she said, you're gonna get a bit of religion today, whether you like it or not. And that's the way she was. You know, she made sure that all the children that came into the house felt love. And, you know, and routine. We had dinner at a certain time. We had breakfast at a certain time. On Sunday morning, it was always rushed to church. So it was a bowl of cornflakes and a packet of cinnamon rolls. I remember those little things in my head as growing up. Whereas in my own house, things were so, you didn't know what one day would bring from the next. And I think for a child growing up, those little things in life and the constant care and the love that we got there, it paved the road for where I am today.
Right.
And I really appreciate her for that, you know.
Right. The funny thing that I saw about you, you've done a lot of things. What you'd really love to be is a policeman.
Yes.
Here you are. Yeah, the biggest, don't want to say it, but certainly one of the biggest in country music here. And what you'd really like to be is a Garda.
Yeah. Well, it came from back before I left Louisiana. I joined, before I left Connecticut, I joined the army because I was never good in school. I'm not good at books and things like that. So my back door in through the police system was to go in the army, get my training as a military policeman, and then hopefully join the state troopers when I came out. And in the meantime, of course, I met Elaine and sort of put a spanner in the works. But there's something about the policing that, you know, as a young fella, I was small, I was wiry, I was a nerd, and I got picked on a little bit, you know, and I said to myself, when I get older, when I get bigger, I'm going to get a gun.
Oh, dear God.
And I'm going to stop these people. No, but I mean that in a good way. But I always looked at other people. And whenever I saw somebody else in a bad situation, I wanted to help out. And I always wanted to be there to try and make a difference. I see young people today, and I see the way that some of them turn out. And I see the way that there's a loss of manners. I mean, when I was growing up, if I didn't say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, or thank you, or I'd be clicked in the ear. Whereas nowadays, things are moving so quick. And I felt like being a police officer would give me a chance to give something back to society. But maybe I'm doing the same here in a different sort of a way. You know?
Yeah, well, obviously, you're providing terrific entertainment for so many people. Mm. And your fans are serious fans.
They are.
And they follow you from one end of the country to the other. But this came late in the sense that it was Garth Brooks that inspired you to give it a go?
Yeah, it's funny. The Garth Brooks connection, when he was first here in the Point Theatre, as it was then, I went to see him because I think it was just because he was American and I hadn't seen an American in a while, so I wanted to go and check him out. I always was a singer. I never thought that Robert Mazzell would be a singer. I never thought that I'd have this career that I have. But when I seen Garth Brooks' success, I thought to myself, well, you know, Irish people love country music.
They sure do.
There was a long, winding road, Marion, to get to where I am today. I mean, I had two-piece bands, three-piece bands. You know, I've played in dance halls to nobody. I remember playing one night in the Well and Moat, and I had the microphone let out in the middle of the floor, and I was dancing with three or four people that were there. And, you know, I pushed and I pushed and I pushed. And, you know, thankfully, the Garth Brooks phenomenon that was here, when he left, it left with him. And I sort of thought that this was going to create this massive country music storm, but it really didn't. Because I think that the people who follow Garth Brooks and the people who follow Robert Mirzel are slightly different. In the sense that there's people who follow me around the country, as you say, from town to town, night after night. I could see a couple in Donegal tonight, and you might see them in Kildare the following night by chance. And there's one woman I want to say hello to, because I'm sure she's listening in this morning. Her name is Sandra, and she's from Remelton up in Donegal, and she's the first woman I ever met at a dance who brought me pork chops. Lamb chops, I'm sorry, is a gift. She's a farmer. And when you meet a woman who comes to your dances and gives you fresh lamb chops, I mean, that's a friend for life. You know what I mean?
Unusual.
Unusual. But you have these relationships with these people, and they become your friends. And down through the years, I was sitting at home one day and I looked out the window. I think it was on a Monday or Tuesday morning. I looked out the window and I seen this car driving up past my house. And of course, I didn't know who it was. I went outside and I said, "Can I help you?" And it was a couple from Scotland. She said, "Oh, we found you." She said, "We've been looking for 4 hours for your house." So they drove up and down the road till they found me. I brought them in for a cup of tea and we had a bit of a laugh.
That sounds a bit like Daniel O'Donnell.
Yeah, well, it's a bit close to the bone, isn't it? But I've actually never been to Daniel's house for a cup of tea, but I'm hoping I'll get a chance to go. But I've created, over the years, I've created a long-term relationship with some of my fans and friends. And of course, it's still great to meet the new ones as well. There's a lot more new people coming back into country music than ever before. And I'm benefiting from that, because I know I've been around for a few years, but I'm still young enough to entertain the younger generation of dancers as well.
Yeah, because I see that your fan base kind of goes from 19 to 90.
Yes, yeah, they do. And it's amazing too when you see a dance hall and you see the young people out doing their, they have all these different sort of like line dances they do. And then of course the core dancers are the good jivers and the waltzers and the foxtrotters. They're the ones that, and I always say they're the bread and butter of what I do, because those type couples, they're the ones that follow us around the country. The young ones still haven't got mobile enough yet, or maybe enough money to get around. Mm. But the people who have their children reared and have their lives in order, they come out to see us more often. And look, it is a phenomenon. And country music has been looked at in sort of relegated to a smoky dance hall for many, many years. And I mean, I know people back to the Big Tom days, and Henry McMahon, the guy who wrote Mama Courtney, I've spoke to these guys about the way the business was, and it's changing, but you have to change with it. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to stay current, stay modern, but it's tough.
It was suggested around the time of the Garth Brooks non-event, so to speak, mm-hmm. that there was a kind of snobbery attached to... from people who aren't country music fans. Mm. Would you think that's true?
Yeah, I think so. We see country music for a lot of people, and there's different types of country music in my eyes. I mean, I sort of fall between two stools in one way. I'm not particularly Irish country. I lean more to the American side.
Yeah.
But I do accept and respect the Irish country scene, because there's a lot of great guys. I mean, I was just listening to the radio this morning. There was a guy talking about Brendan Shine. These guys who've been around for years, and you know, they've sold a lot of albums, and they've entertained a lot of people. I've just signed a new record deal with Dolphin. And in the last couple of months, myself and Dolphin are looking at a project for next year to try. And I want to capture some of those Garth Brooks fans.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm living here. As a matter of fact, you might find it funny, but there's a lot of DJs in Ireland that won't play me on American programs. Because I'm living in Ireland 20 years, he's not American, you know, they forget. So I'm trying to get over that gap, and I'm going to go back to Nashville hopefully the next year or two. I'm going to reinvent my sound and myself and bring it back to Ireland again,
right?
To try and to motivate some of those people who wouldn't be particular country fans to move into what I'm doing, you know.
Yeah, one associates fabulous music with some of those churches that you were talking about that you had.
Oh,
to,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, wasn't that one of the big influences on Elvis as well?
Yeah. Well, I remember the day that I found out that my grandfather died, myself and my mother and my father, we were all playing in a little church in Carthage, Texas. And the way it worked back then, we were only small. It was on a Sunday. But they would do a morning service, and we would sort of lie about on the pews and play around outside and wait for the evening service to come along. And of course, my aunt from Shreveport drove down to Carthage that day to say that her dad had died. And I remember growing up in between those old churches and auction rooms. My grandparents were big into auctions, and we used to run around. So I have a love of auctions and antiques as well because of that.
Right.
And then, of course, I was talking to your researcher there a couple of days ago, and I was telling her that my father played in churches for years and in gospel groups.
Yeah.
But then you could also, a couple of months later, you could find him in a honky-tonk, you know, because in America, they fall off the religious wagon, they get back on again. And it's sort of a revolving door, you know.
Right.
So the music thing for me was hearing this gospel here in this country. It was all sorts. It was such a collage, and it's brought me to where I am today.
Right. You know? It hasn't all been easy moving along for you. You got into trouble with revenue.
Yes, I did. I did. Yeah. I think I'll always be in trouble with revenue because I can't afford to pay them. But no, I got into some trouble with revenue, and I think there's a lot of people out there in the last number of years are in my position. And the thing about revenue is I've discovered that, you know, revenue in some people's mind is a very bad word. And we don't want to, I mean, the little harp that's on the envelope, you know, there for a long time, I hated to see this harp coming through the front door because I knew it wasn't good news. But I have to say, you know, I've come through the most of it. I'm lucky that I'm dealing with people in the office there that are willing to speak to me and talk to me. And look, I made mistakes. There was accounting mistakes, but they haven't yet come to the house and put a gun to my head and said, look, we're taking the front door.
Right.
So let's hope that doesn't happen. But I'm willing to work with them, you know.
Yeah, because that is kind of the image, and particularly at the moment, given the recession, and we're looking for every farthing we can get. You got your name published in the paper for this.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit unfair. I didn't expect. I know I had actually, if I had the wherewithal before the whole audit took place, I was going to ask them not to do that. But I didn't realize at the time that I was going to be publishing this massive headline with other guys who were paying back millions. I mean, my payback was pittance compared to some of these guys.
What was it?
It was 60,000.
Right.
And there were some guys, I think, paid back millions, you know. But look, I mean, my name sparked on that day. There was probably very little news. So they found my name in the pile and they said, well, we'll put this guy up here. But look, as I say, you know, that's the price you pay. And I'm looking forward to getting it all sorted out. You know, I got married last year to a wonderful girl from Tyrone. And just there a week ago, we have a fresh baby in the house.
Lovely. Congratulations.
A little baby girl. She was 9 pounds, 15 ounces.
Oh, God help us.
Yes. And she loves her body.
God help her mother.
She loves her. Her name is Maisie. So, and she's gorgeous. She's gorgeous.
Yeah. And your other daughter, of course, is 21 now.
She's 21 the 22nd.
Right.
So I have so many different balls in the air. I'm juggling everything, Marion. But I can honestly say, and I can honestly say from the heart, that had I not went through all the things I went through in Louisiana to get to Ireland, I wouldn't have what I have today. So I'm thankful to this country for that.
Okay, well, now we were going to play something from Pure Country, isn't that the...
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the album that the Dolphin put together, and I'm so delighted to be working along with Paul O'Reilly and the guys in Dolphin. They do a lot of stuff with Mary Black, and they're serious operators, and they really took a personal interest in what I'm doing. And we have a two album collection out and a live DVD, which is doing very well for us. And I hope people will watch out for us in the new year because we have a few surprises for them. But this song is a little bit tongue in cheek, and it's, you've heard the phrase yourself, Marion, who's your daddy?
Right.
Who's your daddy? Who's your baby? Who's your buddy? Who's your man?
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.